Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball.
Drilled to center field and deep. Back out of his seat, to the track, to the wall. It's gone! Evan Longoria with a two-run home run to straightaway center. And he gives the Rays a 6-4 lead here in the ninth.
Coming up, we'll recap the action from this past week, take a look around Major League Baseball, and sit down for in-depth interviews with the biggest names in the game.
The 2-2 now. Check swing on the slider, strike three. Chris Archer jumps off the mound and bounces his way to the dugout.
Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Good afternoon. Welcome to our show. Today on the program, we will visit with Colby Rasmus, discuss the recent Rays roster moves with Senior Vice President Chaim Bloom, visit with a Rays employee who helped save a life this week, and much more. Hey, watch your team defend the ballpark from the invaders from the north on Saturday, July 8th. The Rays battle the Red Sox, and the first 15,000 fans will take home their very own Evan Longoria Game of Thrones bobblehead. Be a part of the action and visit RaysBaseball.com today. You're listening to This Week in Rays Baseball. Coming up, Colby Rasmus in an interview we did before he found out he was going on the DL for the second time. We'll discuss what he likes about the 4th of July and being with the Rays right after this on the Rays Baseball Network. We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and our featured guest this week is one Colby Rasmus. And Colby, I want to start, since we're nearing the 4th of July, obviously you do a program called Hitters for Heroes the last couple of years. Tell our fans what it's about and why it's important to you.
It is donating to a cause and an organization named Team Rubicon. They get veterans that may not have something to do or are still wanting to serve and maybe need a way to get that service out of them and get them out there doing things. They raise money and then they go in and help in disaster areas, floods, or whatever happens. They send guys in, they get a group of them together, veterans, and they go in and they try to help people and move around things and help in bad situations and rough situations. So, and we all know that it takes money to do that. And one day I just got to talking to my agent about wanting to do something. I went to some VA hospitals and visited some veterans and just decided to go with Team Rubicon.
And obviously you're donating $1,000 for every home run you hit last year and this year. For you, how important is that and why is it so important? Why veterans specifically?
Well, they gave up so much for us to be able to do what we get to do every day. We get to drive down the streets feeling safe and not worried about getting blown up by RPGs and whatnot. Crazy things that are happening in this world, and we have the luxury of living in one of the greatest countries, and I'm thankful of that. I'm proud of that, and I felt that was a good way to show that love and try to at least give some of that back to them. They can't get that time back. They can't get the time back with their families, maybe a limb, maybe an eye. You never know what it may be. They have so many different things going on. There's a lot of men and women that do serve and have served and are in those situations. So I felt just a wanting to, a calling to try and help them in some way that I could, and I thought that would be a good way. And hopefully we can continue to make it something great for them and they can enjoy themselves and get out there and do things in the community and help.
And I think our fans would agree it's an awesome thing. What does the 4th of July then mean to you?
Well, 4th of July is my favorite month of the year, or favorite holiday. And July is one of my favorite months. But, we're always playing baseball, which is the tough part about it. I don't get to go home and shoot my fireworks like I want to, So New Year's, I have to let the whole neighborhood know that I'm home. I usually buy $8,000 to $10,000 worth of fireworks and try to shoot them all off in one night, because I'm an American, and I guess that's just what we like to do in the South. We like to shoot fireworks and cut up and have a good time. So it's a great time of the year, and I love being able to see the festivities that go on, how pretty they make everything in the big leagues, the flags, and just the singing. You're always going to hear a top-notch performance on the national anthem, so that's cool, and God bless America. So it's a fun time. I can't wait till one day when I can spend it at home. I know some fans may not like that, but, baseball isn't everything. There's a lot more to this life than spending time with family, and I think about that. I got an uncle that's over in Germany now serving in the military, and he won't be able to be home for the 4th of July. I'd like to send my prayers over to him and to all those that are serving, and thanks for their service. And, July 4th, happy Independence Day.
I know family is a big part of that day too, and family is very important to you. What does family mean to you, and what's most important about your family?
What's most important about my family? The love that we have for each other. Me and my wife, we're trying to help raise our kids in the best way we can, trying to teach them the right ways, seeing them grow on a daily basis, just the interaction with them, getting to see how they are mimicking what we do. They're little sponges. Growing up in a family that was very oriented on job and work and baseball and focusing on a career, I have been away from my family a lot, traveling, doing all these different things. So with my family, I like to keep them close. My wife and my kids usually travel with me most places that I go, and I try to just love on them as much as I can. You know, we all need love, and this world is hard, you know, and we sometimes get caught up in things that may take us away from loving one another and showing our kids the love that they may need. You know, I'm all about showing them an upbringing that's going to help them have a successful career or fill their needs in this life. But I believe that we all need love, and I try to show my family as much love as I can.
And that was a big reason why you came here to begin with, because it was close to your family, right?
Yeah, I wanted to come to St. Pete. With it being close to home and my wife, we were trying for another baby. So, and knowing that being close to home would be good for us, family, whatever it may be, friends wanting to come and see us or coming, being able to come and watch the game. I have a baseball facility back at home, CR Baseball, that I started. It's turning into somewhat of an organization, a travel ball, and we got a bunch of kids, and we've talked about wanting to bring them down here for games and things like that, and just being able to. Being closer, it opens up avenues for a lot of things to happen for young people, for my family, for kids in my area that may not ever get a chance to see a big league ball game, whether it's in the Tribe or, you know, Yankee Stadium. You know, either way, it's all the same, and I'm thankful to be able to have the chance to do some things like that.
How about your baseball family here? What has this family been like for you? Because you played with some other organizations, Houston, St. Louis, Toronto. Everyone talks about this as a pretty good clubhouse. What's it been like for you?
It's been great. A lot of great guys on this team. I love the way everything's handled here. You know, the coaches know it's a tough game, and they understand. And this game wears on you a lot. It's a stressful environment, and I feel so far here it hasn't been super stressful on myself. Some of that may be with age and just being kind of scarred over from a lot of past wounds. And knowing how to deal with some of those things and kind of get in my own lane and stay, you know, keep between the mayonnaise and the mustard, I like to say, so you don't have to deal with too many things that can alter your mind from thinking about hitting a little white baseball and trying to run it down and catch it, because this world throws so many things at you. There's so much going on, and subconscious, conscious, that we get to thinking about that can throw us off of hitting this little ball. And some folks at home may not understand that side of it because it is such an intricate side, and that's what baseball has built. They have built this super empire off of baseball players' backs. And it's pretty cool to be a part of it and see the different teams and how things have come about. I've come a long way since I was 22 years old when I first made it to the league with the Cardinals. I wasn't even wet behind the ears yet. I didn't know what was going on, and the whole business side and everything that happens, the little details and small details that you would never think happen. You're looking at it from home and watching on TV and seeing Griffey hitting homers on the highlights and, you know, Randy Johnson striking people out. Because I grew up more a baseball player rather than a fan, so I didn't really watch the game for those things. I wanted just to see the highlights, and then I went out in the yard and tried to hit homers like Griffey, and when I was trying to strike my brothers out like Randy Johnson. You know, so with all that being said, it's been cool, and I'm just happy and excited to still be in the league and be able to play and be healthy enough to play this game of baseball, because it is such a tough road, and it's a stressful job for sure.
You talk about health, and you know, you came in with some injuries, and this training staff has a really good reputation. How have they been to work with? Because they have a great reputation helping guys out when they're working their way back.
They've been top notch. They're pro. They definitely have a lot on their plate. With the way things shake up and with all the guys that come into spring training, it's always packed in there, with them working to the bone, you know. So they've been nothing but first class to me. It's been great so far. It's fun to learn how to to maneuver through things and try to guide to an on-field performance that's above even par, if you will, you know. So that's the goal every day, and to try to get out here and help put a piece to the puzzle to play the game the best you can, and that's their goal as well. And, you know, in knowing that, we try to do the best we can to get out on the field. I came in with 5 cuts on my body this off season, and, you know, 2 sports hernias, my hip, the labrum, a little bone spur shaved off my hip, and my groin adductor muscle repaired. You know, and before that happened and before I had the surgery, I don't even know if I'd be able to play again, right? You know, I didn't know if I'd be able to handle the mental strain of playing and having to keep all these things functioning in the right way in a game where you have to bounce around, you're flying and staying on top of a program that can keep all that together is such a hard thing to do. And that's why there's only a certain few superstars that make the big millions, and then you got your middle of the road guys, and you got your guys that get a little cup of coffee, and then the ones that don't even make it. It's such a tough thing to do, and my hat's off to them for helping getting me back on the field. I'll always be appreciative of that, and I hope they know that.
And you also have a coach on the field who I know has a good reputation too, in Chad Mottola, who you knew from Toronto. Now, it was a few years you were separated, but did you guys pick up where you left off? Because you obviously been pretty good at the plates this year.
I wouldn't say we picked up where we left off. There's always bumps in the road with this game. It's all that stuff I just said previously. You're trying to find this little potion every day to be able to get out here and hit this little white ball that the black box is saying is spinning at this certain spin rate that you're not even supposed to hit it, right? So we're trying to do something that's crazy. And then, you know, some guys make it look easy and things like that, but it's all in our preparation and how we get there to that point to be able to make that potion that's going to get us to the right spot. But Motorman, you know, I got nothing but love for Motorman. He's been great to me and just helping me learn myself as a person, not be a robot and not be somebody that's barked at and talked down at. I've learned how to figure out things and what it means in my mind. Not just because some old man says that he knows it, that don't mean that it's going to compute right with what my brain thinks. So in understanding that and learning those things about myself, Motor helped me with that a lot, and figuring out small little habits and things that was kind of getting me astray in my hitting and things like that. So Motor's been nothing but great for me, and I'm super appreciative of all he's done for me. Happy to be back with him, and I hope that I can continue to keep it going.
With as complicated as the game is, I mean, we talked about how things that, you know, help relax the mind. When you're not with family and you're doing something else, what helps you relax and just get away from the game so you can decompress? Hunting, fishing, what are the things you love?
Those things you can't do in the season, which would be great things to be able to do. But as everybody knows, we live in big cities where you can't do those things. And I'm not going to, on an off day, drive 45 minutes, an hour, hour and 30 minutes to go and hunt, because I'll just wear myself down mentally. I'm already doing a stressful enough job. The time that we do have off, I like to put my headphones in, play. I like to listen to music, and I like classical music. I like Beethoven and Mozart, things like that. I get those going in my headphones and try to get to a clear-minded place. And those things help me in that. You know, I do my Bible studies. I try to lean on the Lord in things that I hope that he can help me with and understand in this life, and try to stay spiritually grounded the best I can. We all know that that's a tough task. But I learn every day, learn everything new, or learn something new about myself every day in those little details, and trying to figure out how to balance it all without letting the train get too far off the tracks that you can't get it back on.
Well, I think so far race fans have enjoyed watching you and handle all that to this point in the season. I wish you continued success to you and your family, and good health here with the 4th of July coming.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
It's Colby Rasmus joining us in This Week in Rays Baseball. We continue right after this. You're listening to the Rays Baseball Network. Well, we continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and Senior Vice President of Baseball Operations Chaim Bloom joins us. And Chaim, this has been a pretty busy week. Let's start with the addition of Adani Echevarria. When did it all really start to come together, and how important do you think he is going forward?
Well, this one had been brewing, you know, for probably about a week, maybe a little more than a week prior to it actually really heating up. And when we found out that Adani was available, it was really appealing to us. I mean, this is a guy who we think is one of the better defensive shortstops in the game. We got to see that right off the bat when he joined our club, and very first ball hit to him, he made a phenomenal play. We really like his defensive skill set. And for us, that was just something that you know, adds an elite level skill to our team that we didn't have. And we all love the work that the guys are doing. This guy, we just feel, does it on another level, and that's something we were really excited to add.
How much of it has to do also with Matt Duffy and the injuries that he had and his inability to consistently get on the field?
Yeah, and with Matt, we're the positive thing with Matt, we're very excited to have found, or at least we think we found, the cause of some of the pain he was experiencing, where we had that calcium deposit removed from his heel. But when you have to go in and open somebody up to do that, there's going to be a period of time for a buildup to get them back out on the field. And the last thing we want to do is jeopardize Matt's season by rushing that. And since he hasn't had a spring training, he's going to need some time and some at-bats before he's really ready to compete at the major league level. So this you know, gives us added depth during that period of time while we're waiting for Matt. And it is going to be some time yet.
The move itself is unusual for the Rays, and that of Trevor Plouffe, to be frank. I mean, you guys have probably added more in terms of salary and more in terms of talent than you have in a June since probably this ownership took place. Why now? Why this point of the season?
Well, put simply, we feel we have a chance to win. You got to love what this group has been doing. You watch them every night, and they battle. They don't ever feel like they're out of a game. And that's really great to see. You see heart and fight in a group, and you see them finding ways to win games, even despite all the injuries, despite, frankly, a lot of things not going the way we plan, and to be right in the thick of the playoff race, and then to see opportunities with Plouffe, with Etch, to go add to this team and give them reinforcements and give them you know, more of a chance to compete. Those were opportunities that we felt we had to jump on.
You're now facing a ton of lefties now, but you added Plouffe, as you mentioned. Wilson Ramos comes off the DL. And Adani has been pretty good in his career against left-handers. Do you feel more comfortable now than you did, let's say, a week and a half ago about your lineup against lefties in terms of making a jump there?
I would say yes, and that's part of the reason that we went out and added those guys, particularly Trevor, who has a track record there. And, of course, Wilson Ramos, I think we just view him as a really good all-around player, and that was, you know, the main reason that we pursued him in the winter. And this is the payoff for waiting to get him healthy. So we think this should just make us stronger overall.
You mentioned, you know, Adani and the defense that he provides. How much of that also do you think has a trickle down on the pitchers? Not to knock any of the guys that you had, but, you know, when guys have a confidence level that a certain guy can make the exceptional play, does it give them that much more conviction in the pitches they do throw that if they get a ground ball, it's a play is going to be made?
Yeah, I think there's a snowball effect with a lot of these things. And, of course, the more pitches, the more outs you can save your pitchers, the better shape you're going to be in at the end of the day. And, you know, the work that the guys that we have had on this club have done is outstanding. You know, in particular, Tim. I mean, Tim Beckham is having a phenomenal year, and being able to use him at second base is just going to make us that much stronger.
I know, you know, he obviously expressed some disappointment when it happened. How quickly can a guy get over that, and how important is it for him to get move beyond it so that he's focused 100% on only one thing, and that's being, you know, the best teammate he can?
Yeah, and you can't blame Tim for being disappointed because he is having a great year, and he's a competitor, and he has a lot of pride in what he does. The thing about Tim is he loves to play. He has always just wanted a chance to play. He's gotten that chance this year. He's run with it, and he likes playing. He's a competitor who likes to win, and we believe strongly that at the end of the day, that's going to carry him forward.
You take a look at the one area that, you know, you haven't improved substantially yet, and I know you've tried to, and that's the bullpen. The addition of Brad Boxberger this week, I guess the hope is that he can find his form a little bit?
That's what we hope. And obviously, it's been a while since we've been able to have Box out there and pitching on a consistent basis. Last year, he did a little bit at the end, but just given the year he had, it was kind of a lost year. We've all seen what this guy can do when he's at the top of his game. Time will tell, but we're optimistic.
You also had to make a change with your left-hander. Jose Alvarado was sent down. He skipped AAA. Is it kind of time for him to get refined a little bit? And what can you tell me about Adam Kolarik and what he can bring to the table?
That was a big part of our thought process with Jose. And Jose got pressed into service probably on an accelerated timetable, as we discussed in the past, because we had a need. And he had some great moments that helped us win games. He also showed that he's got some things that he can work on still. And so we're hopeful by getting him down there to AAA with Kyle Snyder and our staff that he can continue to work on those things and fill in that those missing gaps in his development. And at the same time, we're giving a chance to Adam Kolarik, who has been phenomenal down there. This guy has really come a long way. He was with us a little bit last year, rejoined the organization this year. The sinking life on his fastball is tremendous. He's been a ground ball machine, tough angle for lefties, so we're excited to see what he can do.
You've added position players, and that's a little bit easier to do from the outside. How hard is the bullpen market now, and do you think it's going to ease up? We saw last year what the value or the cost of adding bullpen arms was in terms of potential players in your system.
Yeah, there's always a premium placed, and particularly this time of year and leading up to the trade deadline, on relievers, because every team, regardless of the strength of their bullpen, every contender is looking to add depth. Now, that said, we're going to be very aggressive in talking to clubs, as we always are, and just looking for opportunities to make ourselves better.
In terms of making yourselves better, you're trying to do it now and beyond. And with Brendan McKay signed, and he was obviously the big announcement, your first-round pick. What's the plan for him? I know he's going to Hudson Valley at this point.
Yeah, this is a very unique situation. We're excited about it, and our staff's excited about it, to have a true two-way player and give Brendan a chance to go do that. Look, this guy was one of the best position players and one of the best pitchers in college baseball. There's not that many guys that you can say that have been that. Certainly a new thing for us. And because of what he showed over his career at Louisville, we want to give him every chance to do that at the professional level. He's a very level-headed kid. He fully gets what's in front of him. And it's going to be really interesting. We have so much faith in the various player development staff that are going to be working with him to help him maximize both sides of his potential.
And he'll get to do a little bit of each, I guess, in Hudson Valley?
Yeah, we're still talking to him about exactly how we're going to do this. You know, part of this, he's been so successful doing it at the college level. As he gets acclimated to pro ball, especially at the outset, we don't want to change too much for him. He's found a way to do this at a very elite level. And we're going to learn from him, and then we're going to help him learn from the adjustment to playing every single day in pro ball.
Well, we wish him a lot of luck, and we wish you guys a lot of luck going forward, because I'm sure there's a lot to think about and discuss going into the trading deadline.
Thanks, Neil. It should be exciting.
And that is Rays Senior Vice President Chaim Bloom. You know, the big story off the field involving the Rays this week happened in Pittsburgh, where umpire John Tompain helped save a life by preventing a suicide on the Roberto Clemente Bridge. Rays employee Mike Wineman also played a major role in saving that life. And when he got back from Pittsburgh, he relayed the story. Mike was shooting footage for the Rays in his first road trip in six seasons with the club.
And so we'd capture quite a bit of content, you know, of the park and stuff like that. We wanted to catch some around the city and things like that. This particular day, we actually had an interview that we were headed to. So I grabbed a quick bite for lunch, and we're headed, you know, our hotel is just on the other side of the Roberto Clemente Bridge from PNC Park. And we'd been walking every day, basically, to go shoot and to go to the games and stuff, because it was a short walk, beautiful walk. That day we went to grab a bite to eat and head over to capture an interview. And yeah, in front of us, you know, you could see a small group. Four or five people or so, kind of like in a group, and kind of, you could hear, you couldn't hear what they were yelling, but they're kind of yelling. As we approached, mentally you kind of know what's going on, but you're like, that's not really happening type of thing. But as we got closer, you could tell that someone was on the other side of the railing of the bridge. It's about a four and a half foot high railing. And it's all basically barred up, so you can't like get in between the railing or anything. You have to go over. So there's this girl on the other side of the bridge, and there's two other guys up top, basically holding her up. And at that point, knew what it was, because there's another lady that's saying someone needs to call 911. Someone's trying to commit suicide. So at that point, I was carrying all my camera equipment and stuff, so I set the bag down and kind of walked over to see how I could help in the situation, and, you know, looked around, and it was so small and people were just, you know, on the bridge holding her. There wasn't much to do. So the lady was still talking about someone calling 911. So I pulled out my phone to call. And at that time, I basically just looked up and connected eyes with John, who I didn't know at the time was even the ump or anything. But he looked at me, he's like, "Hey man, can you grab her feet? Can you grab her ankles?" And so that's what I did. That's perfect. There was about a 6-inch gap on, 4 to 6-inch gap on the bottom of the, in between this rail and grate, that I stuck my hands in and pulled her feet close to the rail. And there's probably about an eight inch little base buffer that her feet were on, ledge. And so I'm just holding her feet on that ledge. And people, you know, behind us by that time, I don't know, I couldn't see anything at that point. I'm just staring down and seeing feet and the water. And I'm just telling, you know, thinking to myself, hold on, just hold on, just hold on. And praying at that point, like, you know, just give me strength to hold on and give the guys up top strength and just hope the situation end well. So yeah, I mean, at that point, you know, she's struggling and screaming, just let me go, just let me go. I don't need to be here. Just let me go. And crying, and people are shouting words of encouragement from behind. You can hear, you know, we all love you. Like, you know, there's people that love you. You have family. And just trying to find ways to encourage her and hopefully get her back up over the top. So then by that time, you know, the first responders had started to show up and were trying to talk about a way to get her over. They put a rope around her and stuff. I only could see basically the rope coming down by the railing and stuff like that. Rescue boat had showed up down below. But even in this commotion, I guess there was a helicopter. So, but you don't really know what's going on, I guess. You know, at one point during this time, her foot had come out of my grasp and she had went over the edge. And luckily, I mean, I'm telling you, the guys above me were still holding on for dear life. And she didn't go, but got her feet back up. And that was the moment when I was like, I have to hold on tight. I have to, don't let go. And so, yeah, I would watch her feet and basically just hold them as tight as I could. And if she had her pinky toe and her pinky toe was, if it went over the edge, that's when I knew I was loosening up. So I'd have to pull it back in. But no, they brought a sheet and they handed it down to me and I ran it between her legs and they used it as a harness to lift her up and over. And finally got her on the sidewalk on the other side. And, yeah, it was a relief when she kind of came over and, they basically set her down and I kind of got out of the crowd and just let them do their thing and left to grab my bag. And Larry and I walked to the stadium to get our interview.
How scary was all that when you got, you know, some space from it?
You know what? I don't think it all really hit until I would say yesterday, when it became really surreal, reading the articles. And like I said, I didn't even know John was a part of that. I guess I still kind of don't really know how my name got out or anything. But I guess it was possibly because Dave and Andy had mentioned it on the radio because Larry had mentioned to them about it. Yeah, basically MLB came and interviewed me and stuff. And so then media kind of picked up on it. And as I was getting questions and texts and emails and stuff about that time is when it kind of really sunk in about the situation that we were in, all of us. And, you know, people talking, hey, you did a great thing. And, you know, like, to me, it was everybody, because if it wasn't for the team effort, like, you know, the situation could have been a lot different. But, yeah, it was, now you think about it, you know, now that I think about it, few days after, it's definitely, I wouldn't say that I was ever scared or anything. I guess I was scared of letting go, losing her grip and seeing what you could have seen. But at the moment, you're not thinking about that.
I think we all want to think we do the right thing in the right moment, but you did the right thing in the right moment. I mean, have you ever come across anything like that before? Or
I don't know what it is in my life, but I am a religious person. I, you know, have faith and believe in God and everything. And it's funny, I was reading one of the articles by John and he said that, that I was a godsend in showing up, but it's interesting because in my life here, even with the Rays, I've been in that situation twice. And in my life in general, I've been in a few of the situations. So it's interesting to me when I read that, and who knows, you know, where that comes from and stuff like that. But, yeah, I feel like for some reason that I was meant to be there in that time. And place. And I've definitely always been a person that likes to reach out and help people. And so whenever I see a situation like that, that's my first kind of instinct is to see what I can do to help.
And we appreciate that Mike Wineman did that this week in Pittsburgh. Coming up on This Week in Rays Baseball, we look into some potential future Rays stars right after this on the Rays Baseball Network. We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and two Rays players were named to the Futures game, and among them, a guy who's right now in Durham and one of the top pitching prospects in the game at Brent Honeywell. Brent, congratulations. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Neil. Always good to be on with you, man.
Tell me what it meant when you got the news, and were you surprised at all?
Actually, I was, because I'm not really throwing the ball all that great. I've actually thrown the ball a little better than the numbers are showing, but you know, I really wasn't expecting to go this year just because I wasn't performing like I know how I could perform.
So when you got the news, how excited were you? Because this is a chance to perform in a major league ballpark in a setting with obviously some very other talented individuals.
I mean, it's awesome. I wanted to go last year. I wanted to go the year before. I mean, this is kind of a another step, in my opinion, to getting some exposure to different guys, such as, you know, world hitters that are gone that I've never seen before, including some guys that are going to be playing behind me on the U.S. side. But I think that's the main thing. I'm more excited about playing for the U.S. You know, that's going to be my first time playing solely for, you know, kind of the country. I've never played on a USA team. I've never done any of that, but I'm really excited about that.
How about your manager? Jared Sandberg is going to go as a coach, too. How nice will that be to go with someone you're familiar with?
That's going to be awesome. Congratulations to him. But, you know, I met Lucius in spring a little bit, so I know Lucius a little bit. I'm excited about the whole thing. You know, it's going to be a good setting for everybody.
Now, is your family going to get to go to Miami? Obviously, you know, being, you know, down in the South, they're not that far away.
I think so. I think everybody's going to come. You know, mom and dad, brother, stepmom, stepdad, stepbrother, stepsister, my grandparents. So it'll be a good time down there.
In terms of the season itself, you know, you mentioned you were a little surprised. What have you learned? Because you went from double to triple A. I think we talked to you right after the promotion.
I just learned that my stuff will play in the zone. You know, I don't have to nibble at corners. I don't have to do any of that. And I think that's what, you know, me and Kyle are working on right now is, you know, I can beat guys in the zone. I don't have to be so-called artistic. You know, that's what – not. So it might have to be artistic. It's power and more power.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was. I'm just trying to stay in the zone a lot more than possible. And I'm walking a little bit more, guys. I don't really know what's going on with those, but I'll get them under control. But you know, me and Kyle have been working hard since I've been here. So it's I'm on the right track.
Has it been a good learning experience, do you think? Because, you know, this, I think it's important for fans to understand that this is a process as you work your way up.
I mean, absolutely. You know, I've went out and absolutely got my tail kicked three or four times since I've been here. And it's like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know why this is happening. So, you know, we kind of changed a couple things and went about doing stuff to, not the other way or the different way, but just, you know, kind of fine-tuning a little couple things and polishing up a little bit. Because what Kyle Snyder wants is he wants us to get to the major leagues and never come back. So, you know, he doesn't want us to be the greatest triple-A pitcher of all time. He wants us to be one of the greatest pitchers in the big leagues of all time. And I really respect that, but while I'm here, I want to be the best triple-A pitcher of all time, too. So that's just kind of how I am. But, you know, I've seen better days this year. And, you know, it's just it is a learning process. And I think the biggest learning process is make better pitches.
I'm sure that's to come for you. And I hope it's a great experience for you in Miami at the Futures game. We look forward to even bigger and brighter things to come for you in the future.
Thank you, Neil.
That is Brent Honeywell, and joining him to play in the Futures game from the Rays organization is shortstop Lucius Fox of Bowling Green. Lucius, thank you very much for being with us, and congrats.
Thank you for having me, and thanks for congratulating me. I really appreciate it.
Were you surprised when you got the news? What was going through your mind?
Man, so many things. I was so happy when I got the news, but also being in low A, I was kind of surprised because usually I've watched it in the past years, and there was guys in AA and AAA and knocking on the big league door that usually got the invite to this thing. So watching them and later seeing them in the big leagues so short after, I was like, okay, maybe I'm a little ways from it. But getting the news, I was so happy. Words couldn't even explain how I felt, this being a dream of mine since before I even signed.
Now tell me what this will mean to your family too, because for our fans who don't know, again, you're of Bahamian descent. What this means to you and your journey and your family to get to, I would assume they'll get to watch this game at least on TV at worst?
Yeah, at worst on TV. Hopefully they can come see it live. It's not far from home, so that'll be an easy trip for them. But for my family, they were very happy for me being the first Bahamian to participate in this game and representing the world and also the Bahamas. It's a dream come true, man. Just Dave was full of happy emotions and just congratulate me on all my hard work that I put in throughout the years and coming up, and especially my father. This is like a dream come true for him. Just me being considered with the top prospects and all of the minor league, it's just a dream come true.
What are you most looking forward to about this experience? Is it getting in a big league ballpark? Is it getting to know some of the other top prospects? What are you most excited about?
I would say getting to know some of the top prospects, you know, being able to hang with them for a few days and practice together and even play together and test my talent against theirs. That's what I'm mostly looking forward to, seeing every top prospect in baseball and hopefully get to see them in the big leagues along with myself play against them there. But the first case of a big league stadium with big league fans and press and all that, just the whole experience I'm looking forward to, but mostly being with the top prospects and just having fun with them.
Based on your upbringing, other than Tropicana Field, have you been to a big league ballpark before?
Yes, sir. I've been to a few of them, like the old Braves Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to the old Marlins Stadium. I've been to the new Marlins Stadium one time. So this second time would be more meaningful because I actually get to play on the field and participate on the field. But I've been to just like two or three big league stadiums.
Now, for our fans who don't know, again, you came over in the trade last year with Matt Duffy for Matt Moore. So this is your first full year in the organization. What has this year been like? Obviously, you've been a productive player on the field.
Right. It's just been a great year so far, working with the staff of the Tampa Bay Rays since instructing the league, my first taste of getting on the field with the Rays staff. It's been awesome. They've helped me both defensively and offensively, man. Can't thank them enough. And it's just been fun heading out, getting the chance, the opportunity to play every day, compete with my brother's man on the team and trying to win every game we have, but also just getting better as a core.
Where do you think you've grown the most this year?
I'd probably say my defense more. David always tell me I had the tools to play shortstop, but I feel like this year I took in great steps in the right direction with my throw-in accuracy and just using my feet more and just let my hands work, trusting my ability, and I've used all of that in the training I've had with the Rays staff to help me to have a productive season so far.
Now, last year, you actually had jumped to full-season ball with really not having much experience, so did it help a little bit to kind of slow it down and get this, you know, kind of full year starting at a level that you're a little familiar with?
Yes, sir. It helped a lot, actually. You know, just having this first taste of full season last year before I got hurt and not having all the success I wanted this year, I'm able to deal with the tough times more. At the start of this season, the first couple of games, I didn't get a hit at all. And, you know, it started off slow, but with the lessons I've learned from last year struggling, it helped me this year. And hopefully in the future, I'll be able to snap out of, you know, over 10 streaks and that a little bit quicker just by being mentally prepared and mentally strong. But this year, slowing it down really helped me to just focus on what I can get better on and just being a productive player every day.
You mentioned where you've gotten better during the course of this year. Where do you want to continue to grow? Where in this second half of the season do you want to take your game up another level?
I want to continue to get better defensively. I'm not there all the way of my full potential as yet. You know, I still make few mistakes that I can't make once I get to the big league. So defensively, I like to get better, and also offensively, you know, just putting the ball in play more, being more of a tough out, decreasing my strikeout numbers, and just driving the ball for more doubles and hopefully home runs in the future.
That is Lucius Fox, one of two Rays minor leaguers who will be part of next Sunday's Futures game in Miami. We wish him and Brent Honeywell a lot of luck. Now, today is the start of an important period for Major League Baseball. The international signing period is underway. Ben Badler of Baseball America now joins me. And Ben, tell me, what's different with the new collective bargaining agreement about this year's signing period, and how does it impact things?
Yeah, it's very significant rule changes. You know, you have a system set up in the draft with bonus pools, and nobody ever exceeds those bonus pools. But what was happening on the international side was you would have one team that, if you finished with the worst record in baseball, you would have about $5 million, and the team with the best record in baseball would have about $2 million to spend, except that teams did not stay within those bonus pools. They would every year there would be about five, six, seven teams that would just completely blow through their bonus pools. Actually, the Rays did it a couple of times. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, some smaller markets, smaller revenue clubs. The Padres did it just this past year. The Reds, the A's did it as well. The Dodgers did it. I mean, the majority of teams, I should say, went through their bonus pool. And by going over, the next 2 years, you can't spend more than $300,000 on a player. So it was this weird cycle of teams spending lavishly and then being penalized for 2 years. It just wasn't a good system. So the new system now is that every team has a bonus pool of either $4.75 million or $5.25 million or $5.75 million, a little bit extra money for the smaller market and smaller revenue clubs. And it's a hard cap. You can't go over it. You can trade up for a little bit of extra pool money, up to an additional 75% of your bonus pool, original bonus pool allocation. But this is essentially a hard cap on what teams can spend, and it really evens the playing field among clubs.
Are you seeing that? Because I know you put out a top 50 of players to sign, and we'll get to the Rays. They're expected to sign the number one prospect, depending on whose numbers you look at. But are the players fairly well spread out? And now does it really come down to who recruits better in terms of finding the talent?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the Dominican Republic and Venezuela are still the two predominant sources of talent. And there's talent in Mexico and Colombia, Panama. The bonus pools really apply to everybody internationally, with the exception of Canada and Puerto Rico, which are in the draft, obviously. But now it's if you're the Tampa Bay Rays or the New York Yankees, you have the ability to go out every year and sign the number one player on your board every year. It's not like the draft where you're picking, 20th. Well, you got to wait 19 guys to make your pick, and then you're probably gonna have to wait another 30 guys. wait another 30 picks to make your pick. Another 29 guys go off the board. So this way, teams can be, teams that are aggressive, that are thorough and prepared. And are obviously good evaluators as well. I think they can really, really benefit from this system. But it certainly pushes teams to be aggressive in this market.
Wander Franco is considered by some the number one prospect or number two, depending on what board you're looking at. And he is expected to sign with the Rays. What's your take on him? What makes him such a special kid?
Yeah, we have him at number one on our board. I think a lot of teams have him there as well, from clubs I've talked to. He's pretty special talent. I mean, I think people probably know his uncle, Eric Ibar, the Padres shortstop, former Angels shortstop, been in the big leagues for 12 seasons now. He actually has two other brothers who are in the minor leagues now, also named Wander Franco. The good news, to keep it as simple as possible for somebody like me, is that I think this Wander Franco, the 16-year-old shortstop, is by far the best of the group. The first thing that stands out about him when you just see him swing is just how fast his bat is. But, there's a lot of guys with really good bat speed in the Dominican Republic. But Franco really separates himself as just a very mature player for his age, especially at the plate. We talked about the bat speed, but it's also just an extremely advanced approach to hitting. He understands the strike zone. He has excellent hand-eye coordination. And the way the swing comes through the zone from both sides of the plate, it's smooth, but it's also, he's not up there just taking a little swing. He takes pretty hard hacks. He's not up there getting cheated. And for somebody who's not, 6'2", 6'3", he's maybe 5'10". He's strong. He's got very surprising power. At the MLB International Showcase in February, where I was there, some of the top international prospects in the class were there, and he was hitting balls about as far as anybody in BP. But he really separates himself, not just with what he does in BP, but with his game skills. It's a lot of contact in games, very mature strike zone discipline, contact to all fields. And then in the field, I think there's some question about whether he stays at shortstop, but I think he has some attributes to hope that he stays there. If not, he can go to second base. I mean, it's a lot of advanced skillfulness with him right now, with his glove, the way his feet work. He's got a good internal clock at the position to read hops. So there's a lot of very polished, very advanced things about Wander Franco that could have him move potentially very quickly through a farm system once he signs.
Ben, and we're talking with Ben Badler again of Baseball America. As advanced as he is, how hard is it to project kids? Because in the international period, you can sign at 16 years of age. High school draft kids are mostly 18 years of age, and the college top picks are usually 21 years of age. So, I mean, you're almost 2 years behind. How hard is it to project going forward how they'll respond?
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing this for 10 years now, and then obviously we do a ton of coverage of the draft, and then I've been covering the minor leagues for 10 years as well, and I think this is by far the hardest job for a scout or just about anybody in baseball to do is project the futures of, you know, you were talking about 15 and 16-year-old kids, especially coming out of the Dominican Republic and Venezuela, where you do have players playing in more organized games now, but it's not like even going into high school or college where you have stats on these guys. There's mm-hmm. a lot more organization. There's a lot more information on these players. I mean, it really is grassroots scouting. I mean, there's some more technology that is coming into the field there, but it really is that grassroots scouting. You really have to be good at it. And there's a very high failure rate, obviously, for signing these players. But I would say certainly the good thing with Franco is, I mean, you look at the track record of some of the top players. I mean, the number one ranked players we've had in recent years. I mean, Kevin Maitán was the number one guy last year, but very early to say anything on him. But before that, it was Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who's off to an incredible start to his mm-hmm. career with the Blue Jays. Adrian Rondon, who's kind of been up and down so far with the Rays, but certainly has some promise remaining with him. Eloy Jimenez with the Cubs, one of the top prospects in baseball. Franklin Barreto, who is with the signed by the Blue Jays now with the A's. One of the best prospects in baseball and obviously a big leaguer now. But some of these other guys like Ahmed Rosario with the Mets, Rafael Devers with the Red Sox, Gleyber Torres, who signed with the Cubs, and that was with the Yankees, and I think has some similarities to Franco when Gleyber Torres was 16 years old. I think the track record of some of these recent guys who were top prospects or top five kind of guys in a signing class, those guys really separate themselves. There's a lot of consensus on those guys. So, you know, the further down you get beyond the top five, ten guys, there's a lot more of a split camp on those type of players. But there's a lot of consensus on the, you know, the very top guys of the class, like a Wander Franco. So, you know, to me, that gives me a lot of reason for optimism regarding his future and then investment.
Great stuff from Ben Badler. Coming up, the pregame show on the Rays Baseball Network.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Rays Baseball.
Driven in the air to center field. Kiermaier going back at the wall, jumps up, and makes the catch!
If you missed any of the show, catch it on archive at raysbaseball.com/radio.
Driven in the air to right field and deep, turning a springer back to the wall. This one is gone! Home run!